So, Emily, thank you very much for talking with me today. Today's executive order, it's very brief. It does not actually destroy the amendment that it's a law, so that has to be done by Congress. But what is Trump doing with this executive order?
So it just says the IRS shouldn't enforce the Johnson Amendment against speech that has not, quote, ordinarily been treated as participation or intervention in a political campaign, unquote. So that doesn't change current practice pretty much at all, because the current ban isn't enforced against speech that doesn't meet the ordinary test for campaign intervention. So the order doesn't do anything to change existing IRS practices, but what it does do very strongly is send a message, I think, to the folks in Congress that it's a priority of the president to get this law repealed. And we're very, very worried that that's the effect that it's going to have.
Obviously, the Congress is in the hands of Republicans, but they are have difficulty agreeing on certain things.
They do.
They do. Do you see from where you're looking any possibility of the Johnson Amendment actually being repealed in Congress during the Trump administration?
I sure do. And I think while we don't expect this to move as a bill just on its own through Congress, there are a lot of opportunities coming up for it to be attached to legislation, either tax legislation, whatever form tax reform may take. That would be a place where this could get slipped in unnoticed. By the same token, funding packages down the road, the fiscal 18 package being the next one, definitely could carry, if not full repeal, some very harmful legislation to the Johnson Amendment could come that way.
Just when you say the funneling of dark money through churches and charities, is there a good example of how that works, or are you able to maybe tell us a little bit about the process by which that would work?
Sure. Imagine if the president of Notre Dame, for example, any private college, a lot of private colleges are formed as 501c3s. Even under the kind of least restrictive proposal out there, even in a situation where you were to allow de minimis campaign intervention, the president of that university or any state school could send out a tweet, for example, or an email to alumni that said, you know, we endorse Bob for governor, and, you know, you should too. That action could direct so much funding to a candidate that it would be very damaging. And that's just a secondary effect. You know, how many people would be donating to that college, either on the condition that they endorse or oppose a candidate, or with the understanding that, you know, when I give this money, which is tax deductible, by the way, a certain percentage of it is going to go towards endorsements of candidates that I like.
I guess lastly, just on sort of a historical note, you mentioned that the IRS currently does not really enforce the Johnson Amendment that much. Is there like a point in history where that became the IRS's policy, or has that just kind of been the case over the years?
You know, when the Johnson Amendment was passed, it was sort of, you know, widely agreed to be a good idea. It was a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican president that signed it. So it was uncontroversial, and indeed has remained uncontroversial since then. It is only in the last few years that it has become an issue from a very small handful of some evangelical leaders, when in fact it's something that most, even evangelical leaders, but more than that, most religious groups, the vast majority of nonprofits do not want.
Emily Peterson-Casson with Public Citizen and the Bright Lines Project. It's almost 5 o'clock where you are, so I'll let you go. Thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.